On this tape, I'm going to do, well, first, you'll hear the songs that I did, and then Artie and I will do Benedictus for you. Artie's not here. I don't know where he is. He's supposed to come here, but he went somewhere with his scooter to get license plates for a scooter, so he should be back in a minute. And then I'm going to take this tape and borrow Debbie's machine and put Debbie on the tape so that you'll be able to hear in person the Debbie Epstein Jubilee. Yeah, what do we do now? You want to speak all this? Say all this. Let's rip it out like a bus. No, I can't. I can't say anything because I'm shy. Don't say anything.
What else?
Did you want to say it?
Oh, not alone.
No. Yeah, then what?
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again, because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping, and a vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. Restless dreams I walk alone, narrow streets of cobblestone, neath the halo of a street lamp. I turn my collar to the cold and damp, when my eyes were stabbed by the flash of a neon light that split the night. Touch the sound of silence, and in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more. People talking without speaking, people hearing without listening, people writing songs.
Paul, what message are you giving in the music of The Sounds of Silence?
The Sounds of Silence is a song about the inability of people to communicate, to speak to each other and to touch each other. And this is just a breakdown in communication. So you have people speaking in cliches and listening in cliches. We don't say something that's very important, and so people don't expect to hear anything important, and so they don't really listen. So when something gets said that is important, they don't hear it anyway.
In the summer of 65, I found that one of the songs from the album that Paul and I had recorded for Columbia Records the year prior, the album being Wednesday Morning 3 a.m., and the song being a folky version of The Sound of Silence, two voices, one guitar. That song was getting a lot of response from radio stations and callers, people calling in the Florida area, and it would persist through month after month until they called New York and said, we think you should put it out as a single, and that's why Tom Wilson, the producer of Columbia, took The Sounds of Silence and added a bass, a drum, an electric 12-string guitar, the fashionable sound of that year. And then played it for me when I came home from Europe in September of 65. And I was just, you know, amused. I was not so invested in whether it'll be successful or not. I was feeling like a veteran of failure at that point. So I was just amused, and then I watched my life change over the ensuing months.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again, because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping, and the vision
that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone, narrow streets of cobblestone, neath the halo of a street lamp. I turned my collar to the cold and damp, when my eyes were stabbed by the flash of a neon light. Split the night and touch the sound of silence.
Well, the passage of, you know, four decades has given the lyrics an extraordinary power, simply because they've endured for such a long time. Again, for me, I am always aware of the fact that I was 21 years old when I wrote it. So I'm kind of amazed that I actually wrote that. Although at the time, I just thought that I was writing better, you know. But now, when I look at it, I think, well, that was you know, something really extraordinary that I wasn't aware of at the time. And because it was a serious song about who knows what, many things, you know, it has the power to become about something today, and that power is enhanced by the passage of time. So you have the combination of nostalgia, and that's very powerful for people our age and for their children who remember hearing it, you know, in a living room or something on a stereo. And on top of that, there are lines that resonate within the culture today. Even though they're not exactly applicable, they still feel like you're talking, certainly in mood, you're relating to the mood of today. And that connection of the present and the past is the power of the song.
Whispering the sounds of silence.
Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel were born 3 weeks apart. Simon in Newark, New Jersey, on October 13, 1941, and Garfunkel in Forest Hills, Queens, on November 5, 1941. The Simon family moved to Forest Hills in 1945, taking up residence just 3 blocks away from the Garfunkels. Paul and Art would become friends in sixth grade in 1953, when they both won roles in the school play, Alice in Wonderland. They started walking home together after rehearsals and realized that they shared an interest in music. The boys became teenagers the next year, 1954, the same year that Sun Records would release Elvis Presley's first two landmark singles. Paul Simon has stated that he started playing guitar because of Elvis.
Well, that's all right, Mama. That's all right for you. That's all right, Mama. Just anyway you do.
Meanwhile, Art Garfunkel was at home, using 2 tape recorders to train himself to sing with perfect pitch. The boys joined a street corner doo-wop group called the Peptones and learned to harmonize. They performed as a duo at school dances and began working out their own songs together. In 1957, they cut a demo for $2 at Sanders Recording Studio in Times Square. A businessman named Sid Prosen happened to be in the waiting room and overheard them performing their song, Hey Schoolgirl. He offered to back them and ended up releasing the song as a single in the fall of 1957. On a record label he optimistically called Big Records. Simon and Garfunkel assumed the name Tom and Jerry, Garfunkel calling himself Tom Graff, Paul Simon calling himself Jerry Landis. Sid Prosen used payola, bribing DJ Alan Freed $200 to play the single on his radio show, and it became a nightly staple. Thanks to this attention, Hey Schoolgirl went into regular rotation on nationwide AM pop stations and ended up selling over 100,000 copies, just eking its way into the top 50, landing at number 49 on Billboard. Sid Prosen promoted the duo heavily, landing them a televised appearance on Dick Clark's American Bandstand, although the footage has been lost. They went on right after Jerry Lee Lewis bashed out Great Balls of Fire. As Paul Simon remembered it, quote, "It was a tough act to follow. We didn't meet him before or after the show, though. I think we were too scared." They were 16.
Papaloochie-pa, you're mine. Say, woo, papaloochie-pa, you're mine. Hey, schoolgirl in the second row, the teacher's looking over, so I gotta whisper way down low. You say, woo, papaloochie-pa, let's meet at the school at 3. She said, hey, baby, there's one thing more. My school is over at 4:30. Maybe when we're older than a weekend day. Teacher's looking over, so I gotta whisper way down low. You say, woo, papa, loochie, pa, let's meet after school at 3. She said, hey, babe, I got a lot to do. It takes me hours when my homework's through. Sunday will go steady, so don't you fret. Not yet. Let's meet after school at 3. Then she turned around at me with that gleam in her eye. She said, I'm sorry if I passed you by. I'm gonna skip my homework, gonna cut my class, bug out of here real fast. Hey, schoolgirl in the second row, now we're going steady, hear the words that I want you to know. Well, it's a whoop-a-loop-a-loop-a, you're mine. I knew it all the time. Woo, papa, loochie, pa, you're mine. Woo, papa, loochie, pa, you're mine. Woo, papa, loochie, pa, you're mine. Woo, papa, loochie, pa, you're mine.
The success didn't last. As Tom and Jerry, they released 3 more singles on Big Records: Our Song, That's My Story, and Don't Say Goodbye. But none of them were successful, and the label folded.
Pretty baby, pretty baby, I'm so la-la-la-la in love with you. You made me cry, say goodbye, don't leave me, honey, till the day I die. Pretty baby, don't say goodbye. Love to call you on the telephone, but when I go, I see you're not alone. Pretty baby, don't make me cry. Pretty baby, my pretty baby, don't let your love pass us by. Please, pretty baby, won't you love me too? I'll hold you tight to say I do. Pretty baby, I'm in love with you. Say goodbye, don't leave me, honey, till I die, die. Pretty baby, don't say goodbye. Love to call me on a telephone, but when I call, I'll see you not alone. Pretty baby, don't make me cry. Pretty baby, my pretty baby, don't let your love pass us by. Won't you love me too? Well, I'll hold you tight till you say I do. Pretty baby,
Paul and Art graduated from high school in the summer of 1958 and both enrolled in university. Art at Columbia, studying architecture, and Paul at Queens College, studying literature. Paul Simon still pursued his songwriting, and Art was still singing, but it would take a few years before the pair would team up again, when the folk craze hit, and they started performing in Washington Square Park, and then at the folk clubs in the village. Paul graduated from Queens College in February of 1973, but Art stayed on at Columbia, pursuing a graduate degree. Paul Simon grew restless and flew to Paris, busking and writing songs. He returned to New York in the fall and played some of his songs for Art. Art was excited about the songs, but he was immersed in graduate school. Then, in November, JFK was assassinated. It was looking like the 60s was going to be a turbulent decade.
I have just talked to Father Oscar Hubert of the Holy Trinity Catholic Church. He and another priest tell me that the pair of men have just administered the last rites of the Catholic Church to President Kennedy. President Kennedy has been assassinated. It's official now. The president is dead.
One evening, soon after the assassination, Paul Simon took his guitar into the bathroom at his parents' home, turned on the sink to drown out the noise from the rest of the house, switched off the light, and sat down on the tile floor, the guitar in his lap. He strummed a chord. The president was dead. 10s of thousands of American soldiers had already been sent to Vietnam, with many more to follow. Four little girls had just been killed in a church bombing in Birmingham, Alabama, as the Civil Rights Act was making its way through Congress. Bob Dylan's Blowin' in the Wind had been a top 10 hit in August, and Paul Simon was inspired by Dylan's social commentary. He wanted to be an artist like Dylan, but in an effort to please his parents, he had enrolled in law school. He hated it. He wanted to quit, but his parents would be disappointed. He felt alienated, frightened, confused. He sat there in the blackness and strummed another chord and sang some words.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again.
The new song would take Paul Simon several months to complete. He first played it for Art Garfunkel in February of 1964. Art was still in school, now studying mathematics and education at Columbia. Paul had dropped out of law school, and he stayed busy writing songs and trying to sell them to publishers. He scored an audition with Tom Wilson, Bob Dylan's producer. Wilson was impressed and started talking about placing Paul's songs with other artists, but Paul asked for an opportunity to audition as an artist himself, with his singing partner, Art. Simon returned the next day with Garfunkel, and Wilson recorded a demo with the duo at Columbia's historic Studio A on 7th Avenue. One of the songs recorded was the new song. On the early releases, the song was listed as The Sounds of Silence. But since the Greatest Hits album in 1972, the song has usually been referred to as The Sound of Silence. I will refer to it as The Sound of Silence for the rest of the episode. Tom Wilson knew the song was special, and he prevailed upon Columbia Records to sign the duo. The decision was made that the pair would go by their real names, Simon and Garfunkel, even though somebody at Columbia suggested they call themselves the Catchers in the Rye. Recording sessions began for an album in late February, the album to be made up of half Paul Simon originals and half folk covers. The very first Paul Simon original to be recorded for the album was The Sound of Silence.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again, because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone, narrow streets of cobblestone, 'neath the halo of a street lamp. I turned my collar to the cold and damp, when my eyes were stabbed by the flash of a neon light. It split the night and touched the sound of silence. And in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more, people talking without speaking, people hearing without listening, people writing songs that voices never share. No one dared disturb the sound of silence. Fool said I, you do not know. Silence like a cancer grows. Hear my words that I might teach you. Take my arms that I might reach you. But my words, like silent raindrops, fell and echoed the wells of silence. The people bowed and prayed to the neon god they made. And the sign flashed out its warning in the words that it was forming. And the sign said the words of the prophets are written on the subway walls, tenement halls, whispered.
Wednesday Morning, 3 a.m. was released on October 19, 1964, and it was a failure, initially selling as little as 1,000 copies. And it seemed like that was it for the partnership. Art Garfunkel remained in grad school at Columbia, and Paul Simon flew back to Europe, this time to England, where he began playing regularly at folk venues. He made friends, fell in love. An influential fan, a woman named Judith Pipe, knew people at the BBC, and she convinced them to invite Paul to their studios, where they recorded performances of 12 of his songs, including The Sound of Silence. The BBC started playing Paul's songs on a daily morning show called 5 to 10. Simon's songs received such an enthusiastic response from listeners that CBS Records in the UK asked him to record a solo album. They flew Tom Wilson to London to produce the album, just Paul and his acoustic guitar. The album ended up being called The Paul Simon Songbook and was released by CBS in the UK only in the summer of 1965. The Paul Simon Songbook included a newly recorded solo version of The Sound of Silence.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again, because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone, narrow streets of cobblestone, 'Neath the halo of a street lamp, I turned my collar to the cold and damp. When my eyes were stabbed by the flash of a neon light that split the night and touched the sound of silence. And in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more. People talking without speaking, people hearing without listening, people writing songs that voices never share, and no one dare disturb the sound of silence. Fool, said I, you do not know. Silence like a cancer grows. Hear my words that I might teach you, take my arms that I might reach you, but my words like silent raindrops fell and echoed in the wells of silence. And the people bowed and prayed to the neon god they made. And the sign flashed its warning in the words that it was forming. And the sign said the words of the prophets are written on the subway walls and tenement halls, and whispered in the sounds of silence.
Following the album's release, Paul Simon set out on a tour of Northern England. Meanwhile, back in the States, a late-night DJ at WBZ-FM in Boston, who was a fan of the Simon & Garfunkel record, set out to resurrect it. He started playing The Sound of Silence regularly, and it caught on. Requests came in, and radio stations up and down the East Coast, all the way down to Florida, started playing the song. Producer Tom Wilson heard about this new wave of interest in Simon & Garfunkel in the States, The Sound of Silence in particular, and he decided to seize the opportunity. One night in June, after a recording session for Bob Dylan's next album, Wilson asked a few of the musicians to stay late and help him with a small project. Inspired by the success of other folk rock hybrids, like a Rolling Stone and the Byrds versions of Mr. Tambourine Man and Turn, 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 Tom Wilson crafted a rock remix of The Sound of Silence. The musicians were Al Gorgoni and Vinnie Bell on guitar, Bob Bushnell on bass, and Bobby Gregg on drums. The tempo on the original Simon & Garfunkel recording was uneven, making it difficult for the musicians to keep the song in time. Simon & Garfunkel were not informed that their song was being remixed. Neither were they informed that the new version was going to be released as a single. At first, Paul Simon was upset. He didn't like his song being tinkered with without his knowledge. If Columbia had wanted an electrified version of the song, he could have done it himself. but he was off touring in England. Tom Wilson wanted to immediately capitalize on the buzz the song had generated and not spend time convincing Paul to do it and then waiting for him to finish it. Wilson just did it, and Columbia released it. The new version of The Sound of Silence came out in September of 1965 and entered the Billboard charts in November. By the beginning of the next year, it was a number one single. Paul Simon had returned to the U.S. in December and teamed back up with Garfunkel. The plan was to milk the single's success for maybe 6 months, make some money, then Paul would head back to England. Throughout the month of January 1976, The Sound of Silence went back and forth with the Beatles' We Can Work It Out at the number one spot on the Billboard Hot 100. The Sound of Silence was number one for the weeks of January 1st and January 22nd, and number two for the intervening 2 weeks. We Can Work It Out was number one for the weeks of January 8th, 15th, and 29th, and number two for the 2 weeks that The Sound of Silence was number one. Overall, the new version of The Sound of Silence spent 14 weeks on the Billboard charts. Although the single does hold the dubious distinction of being the first single ever to drop from the number one spot all the way out of the top 10. Columbia Records, of course, now suddenly wanted another Simon and Garfunkel album, which never would have happened without the success of the single. The first album had been dead on arrival, and it is unlikely that Simon and Garfunkel would have ever regrouped and continued as an entity without the success of the new version of The Sound of Silence. But suddenly there they were, a number one single, making a second album for Columbia. The album would be called The Sounds of Silence, and half the songs would be re-recorded versions of songs that were on Paul's solo album in the UK, the Paul Simon Songbook. They made the record in just a few weeks, and it came out in April of 1966. I Am a Rock went top 10 in June. The album would eventually sell 3 million copies. Simon and Garfunkel were suddenly superstars.
A winter's day in a deep and dark December. I am alone, gazing from my window to the streets below on a freshly fallen silent shroud of snow. I am a rock, I am an rock. Built walls, a fortress deep and mighty that none may penetrate. I have no need of friendship. Friendship causes pain. It's laughter and it's loving I disdain. I am a rock. I am an rock. Talk of love. Well, I've heard the word before. It's sleeping in my memory. I won't disturb the slumber of feelings that have died. If I never loved, I never would have cried. I am shielded in my armor, hiding in my room, safe within my womb. I touch no one and no one touches me. I am a rock. I am an island. And a rock feels no pain, and an island never cries.
In In the very first issue of Crawdaddy magazine, printed in a Brooklyn basement 2 weeks after the Sounds of Silence album was released, Paul Williams, the 17-year-old editor, called the Simon & Garfunkel album, quote, easily the best American album since Bob Dylan's Bringing It All Back Home. Only 500 mimeographed copies of this first issue of Crawdaddy went into circulation, but one of them made its way to Paul Simon. He called Paul Williams on the phone to thank him for the review. Ironically, The Sound of Silence was not a big hit in England for Simon & Garfunkel, because a group called The Bachelors beat them to it, having a top 10 hit with the song in March of 1966.
Hello darkness, my old friend, I've come to talk with you again, because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping, and the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone, narrow streets of cobblestone, neath the halo of a street lamp, I turned my collar to the cold and damp, when my eyes were stabbed by the flash of a neon light that spent the night and touched the sound of silence. And in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more,
maybe more.
People talking without speaking, people hearing without listening, people writing songs that voices never share.
No one dare disturb the sound of silence.
Die, you do not know. Silence like a cancer grows. Hear my words that I might teach you. Take my arms that I might reach you. Put my words like silent raindrops fell and echoed in the walls of silence. People bowed and prayed to the neon god they made, and the sign flashed out its warning in the words that it was for me, and the sign said the words of the prophets are written on the subway walls, tenement hall, and whispered in the sound of silence.
I think The Sounds of Silence is a great album. The songwriting is top-notch. The production is really well done. Simon and Garfunkel's voices sound great together, so the songs are better with Art singing with Paul than they were on Paul's solo album with just Paul singing. It's a very immersive record. It's a dark, dreary, kind of depressing album, but with pretty harmonies, great singing, nice musicianship. Overall, I enjoy the record a lot. But Simon & Garfunkel thought it was a rush job, and it sort of was. It was done quickly just to capitalize on the sudden success of the single. They spent a lot more time on the follow-up. And this next album, Parsley, Sage, Rosemary, and Thyme, it was the first time that Paul Simon took complete control over all aspects of the recording. The album came out in October of 1966 and was highly critically acclaimed, and it was a top 10 hit.
I'm sitting in the railway station, got a ticket for my destination. On a tour of one night stands, my suitcase and guitar in hand, and every stop is neatly planned for a poet and a one-man band. Homeward bound,
thoughts escaping home, where my music's playing home, where my love lies waiting silently for me.
And it was at this point, with the success of Parsley, Sage, Rosemary, and Thyme, that Simon and Garfunkel caught the attention of director Mike Nichols, formerly of the comedy duo Nichols and May. The previous year, Nichols had directed the film adaptation of the Edward Albee play Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, and now he was working on his next film, an adaptation of the Charles Webb novel The Graduate. He decided he wanted Simon and Garfunkel to provide the music for his film. Paul Simon didn't particularly like the novel, but he did like the $25,000 he was offered to write three new songs for the film. Mike Nichols and his editor, Sam Osteen, used Scarborough Fair, April Come She Will, and The Sound of Silence as placeholders as they edited the film, waiting for Paul Simon to submit his original songs. But when Paul Simon submitted two songs called Punky's Dilemma and Overs, Nichols didn't like them, and he had gotten used to the other three songs while editing the film, and those songs would remain in place in the final cut of the film. But Nichols still wanted at least one original new song for the film. Paul Simon had an incomplete song called Mrs. Roosevelt. He sang what he had for Nichols, and Nichols had an epiphany. Change it to Mrs. Robinson, like the character in the film. That song by Simon and Garfunkel, Mrs. Robinson, would be a number one hit.
Jesus loves you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mrs. Robinson. Heaven holds a place for those who pray. Hey, 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 hey. We'd like to know a little bit about you for our files. We'd like to help you learn to help yourself. Look around you, all you see are sympathetic eyes. Stroll around the grounds until you feel at home. And here's to you, Mrs. Robinson. Jesus loves you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mrs. Robinson. Heaven holds a place for those who pray. Hey, 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 hey. Hiding place where no one ever goes. Put it in your pantry with your cupcakes. It's a little secret, just a Robinson's affair. Most of all, you've got to hide it from the kids. Coo-coo-ca-choo, Mrs. Robinson. Jesus loves you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mrs. Robinson. Heaven holds a place for those who pray. Hey, 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 hey. Sitting on a sofa on a Sunday afternoon, going to the candidates' debate. Laugh about it, shout about it when you've got to choose. Every way you look at it, you lose. Where have you gone, Joe DiMaggio? A nation turns its lonely eyes to you. Ooh, what's that you say, Mrs. Robinson? Joe to Joe, it's not been gone away. Hey, hey, hey.
The Graduate was released on December 22, 1967, and it was a huge success. It is one of the most successful and iconic films of all time. The film launched the career of Dustin Hoffman, and it won Mike Nichols a Best Director Oscar. It grossed $104 million in theaters on a budget of $3
million. Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again.
Listen, everybody, I want you all to be quiet. I've got Ben's college yearbook here, and I just want to read you some of the wonderful things about Ben.
Hey, there's the award-winning scholar.
We're all very proud of you, Ben.
How are you, track star?
What are you going to do now?
I was going to go upstairs for a minute.
Oh, I meant with your future, your life.
Well, that's a little hard to say.
Because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping.
Mrs. Robinson, you're trying to seduce me. Aren't you?
Have you gotten us a room yet?
I haven't, no.
Do you want to?
I'll get undressed now. Is that all right?
Sure. Shall I? Shall I just stand here? I don't know what you want me to do.
Why don't you watch?
Oh, sure. Thank you.
Benjamin, are you having an affair with someone?
I do think you should know the consequences of what you've done. I do think you should know that my wife and I are getting a divorce soon.
What happened between Mrs. Robinson and me was nothing. It didn't mean anything.
Well, that's not saying much for my wife.
The point is, I don't love your wife. I love your daughter, sir.
Are you going to Scarborough?
Ask you a question and then I'm going.
From him?
No. I want to know why you're here in Berkeley. Is it because I'm here?
Well, look, I love you.
Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme.
Will you marry me?
We're getting married tomorrow.
Why don't you just drag me off if you want to marry me so much?
You can't stop me from seeing her, Mrs. Robinson. I'll find her.
Sorry we won't be able to invite you to the wedding, Benjamin, but the arrangements have been so rushed.
Oh, Jesus, God. No.
Released in January of 1968, Simon and Garfunkel's soundtrack to The Graduate went to number one on Billboard. The film also meant a second rebirth for the song The Sound of Silence, as it played a very prominent role at the very beginning of the film. The entire song plays as a seemingly nervous or troubled Benjamin Braddock, played by Dustin Hoffman, rides a conveyor belt at the airport for a minute and a half, then grabs his suitcase and exits. This placement of the song in the opening scene of the film, a hugely significant film, only served to make the song itself all the more memorable, iconic, and culturally significant. It's interesting to note that when the album Wednesday Morning 3 AM originally came out, with the original version of The Sound of Silence, the hipsters in the village, the folk purists at Folk City and the Gaslight, they mocked Simon and Garfunkel, and they scoffed at the song. Dave Van Ronk, a notable folk singer from the time, and in part the inspiration for Llewyn Davis in the Coen Brothers film, remembers that the hipsters of his day, including himself, made fun of the song. Quote, "Sounds of Silence actually became a running joke. For a while there, it was only necessary to start singing, 'Hello Darkness, My Old Friend,' and everybody would crack up." The Sound of Silence was added to the National Recording Registry in the Library of Congress for being, quote, "culturally, historically, or aesthetically important" in 2012. Here are some thoughts from Paul Simon about the song. "I think about songs that it's not just what the words say, but what the melody says and what the sound says. My thinking is that if you don't have the right melody, it really doesn't matter what you have to say. People don't hear it. They only are available to hear when the sound entrances and makes people open to the thought. Really, the key to the Sound of Silence is the simplicity of the melody and the words, which are youthful alienation. It's a young lyric, but it's not bad. It's not a sophisticated thought, but a thought that I gathered from college reading material or something. It wasn't something that I was experiencing at some deep, profound level. It was a post-adolescent angst, but it had some level of truth to it, and it resonated with millions of people, largely because it had a simple and singable melody.
We're very happy to be here on your TV program, Twin, in Holland, and we would like to do now a song.
It's called Sounds of Silence.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again, because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. And it's true, I walk along narrow streets of cobblestone, 'neath the halo of a street lamp. I turn my collar to the cold and damp, when my eyes were stabbed by the flash of a neon light that split the night. Touch the sound of silence, and in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more, people talking without speaking, people hearing without listening, people writing songs that voices never share. That I, you do not know. Silence like a cancer grows. Hear my words that I might teach you. Take my arms that I might reach you. But my words like silent raindrops fell. And the people bowed and prayed to the neon god they made. And the sign flashed its warning in the words that it was forming. And the sign said the words of the prophets are written on the subway walls and tenement halls.
There is clearly something special about the sound of silence. One could describe it as simple or repetitive, but in this case neither of those would serve as a criticism, because in part the song is so effective because of that subtle way that it is constructed, the way it sets a tone, creates an atmosphere, and then builds and builds. The addition of guitar, bass, and drums definitely improved the song, because it amplified all of these aspects that were already present, the tone and the atmosphere and the way the intensity builds. Simon and Garfunkel's voices blend together in such a perfect way, and it was that moment in time, that song, sung by those voices, that's what made it so impactful. And then the placement of the song in The Graduate and how the atmosphere and intensity of the song interacted with Dustin Hoffman's performance as he rode that conveyor belt, where you can see the fear and confusion and alienation on his face while you hear it and feel it in the song. So The Graduate made the impact of the song even more profound. The lifespan of this song is fascinating. It was completely ignored when it was first released. Its creators felt like failures. Then suddenly the song was rediscovered, And then it was given a rebirth, reborn, and then another remixed. And then suddenly the song was almost universally loved and catapulted Simon and Garfunkel to stardom and a long career as artists. And then the film made the song all the more iconic. The Sound of Silence is an American treasure, and it all started with Paul Simon seated on the floor in the dark in his parents' bathroom. The sink was running, and he was just trying to come up with something. He had something to say. He needed to figure out how to say it. Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel just happened to be born 3 weeks apart and live 3 blocks apart. Would we even have this song without those coincidences? Probably not. In 1993, Simon and Garfunkel performed a special version of The Sound of Silence with guest guitar player Eddie Van Halen at the Bridge School Benefit at the Shoreline Amphitheater in Mountain View, California.
Thank you. so much. My great pleasure to be here. Thank you.